This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Day of the U.S.-Israel genocidal war in Gaza, while occupation forces persist in their aggressive campaign against Palestinians. The U.S. Secretary General urges governments to sustain contributions to UNRWA, highlighting the critical support that's needed for nearly 2 million civilians in the besieged Gaza Strip. And in a significant scientific achievement, Iran successfully launches 3 domestically manufactured satellites into orbit. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. It's good to have you with us. More deaths and destruction in the Gaza Strip as Israel bombs nearly 24 locations, 114 days into its onslaught on the territory. The regime has killed 165 Palestinians and injured 290 others in 24 hours. The death toll from the nearly four-month genocide now stands at 26,422, most of them children and women. Meanwhile, the Gaza Media Office says that the regime has killed 120 reporters in the coastal strip since the aggression began. Israel's indiscriminate bombings have also destroyed much of the Gaza Strip and its infrastructure, including hospitals. Doctors Without Borders say that Gaza no longer has a functioning healthcare system. Mutaba Musaba is a correspondent joining us from Deir al-Bala to give us the latest. Mutaba, we understand that the death toll has arisen. Tell us about that and, of course, any other developments that you deem important.
Yes, actually, it's the 114th consecutive day of this continuous Israeli aggression targeting Gaza Strip. And the Israeli airstrikes and the Israeli attacks are still maintained, hitting all areas of Gaza Strip, despite that those attacks actually are intensified in Khan Yunis city particularly. However, last night was harsh for the Palestinian civilians inside Gaza city as the Israeli warplanes maintained their attacks and their airstrikes against several residential buildings in the western parts of Gaza city and even the southern parts of Gaza city. And even in the northern part of Gaza Strip and Beit Lahia city, the Israeli artillery actually continued its attacks and its shelling to the areas near the coastal areas of those of the northern part of Gaza Strip. And particularly in the Khan Yunis city, we can say that as well, the Israeli artillery also continued its attacks targeting those areas. So we are talking about continuous attacks reaching all areas of Gaza Strip, despite that those attacks are intensified and concentrated against the Palestinian civilians in Khan Yunis city. It's worth mentioning that according to Gaza's health ministry, that the number of the Palestinian civilians killed yesterday over the last night actually reached 165 Palestinian civilians in 19 horrible massacres committed by the Israeli occupation forces, where the injuries actually hit 290 Palestinians. And so this kind of the continuous targeting and the continuous shelling actually took the number of the Palestinian civilians who have been killed since the beginning of this onslaught so far to 26,422 Palestinian civilians, in addition to 5,087 injuries. So we are talking about continuous Israeli attacks and rising number of the Palestinian civilians and the Palestinian casualties who are being hit and targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. In the meantime, we can say that the Palestinian resistance actually kept fighting back against the Israeli occupation forces that attempt to raid and to storm into those areas, particularly Khan Yunis city and even the eastern parts of Gaza city and the northern part of Gaza Strip, Beit Lahia. They were engaged in fierce gunfights with the Israeli occupation forces, preventing them from moving forward to the center of those areas. So we can see clearly that after 114 consecutive days, the Israeli occupation forces haven't yet controlled those areas or took control of those areas completely, despite the relentless, unabated bombardments and attacks that reached and hit those areas.
Thank you for that. Matiab Masabid there, talking to us from. Thank you. The UN chief has called on the Western governments that have suspended funding for UN's Agency for Palestinian Refugees to at least guarantee the continuity of its operations. Antonio Guterres said 2 million civilians in Gaza depend on critical aid from UNRWA for daily survival. He added that the agency's current funding will not allow it to meet all requirements to support them in February. The UNRWA chief has also slammed the aid cuts as shocking. Several countries, including the U.S. and the U.K., have suspended donations to UNRWA following Israeli allegations that some of the agency's staff were involved in Hamas' October 7 operation. The Palestinian resistance movement has called on the U.N. and other international organizations not to cave into Israeli threats and blackmail. The Israeli military has launched a fresh incursion into the city of Jenin in the occupied West Bank. Details from the operation are sketchy, but there are reports that the regime has deployed special forces and snipers near the Jenin refugee camp. The reports say resistance fighters have engaged the intruding forces in armed clashes in Al-Hadaf neighborhood of the city. The Israeli military has launched dozens of deadly raids into Jenin since the regime began its onslaught on the Gaza Strip on October 7. That is part of a wider campaign of raids in the West Bank that has killed over 370 and injured 4,300 others. A correspondent from Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier joined us with more details about the Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp.
News coming from the refugee camp revealed that the Palestinians in the refugee camp discovered the undercover unit in the Al-Hadaf neighborhood in Jenin refugee camp. And this means that Israeli forces were there and they raided the refugee camp of Jenin and the city of Jenin. The clashes are taking place and the operation is still going on. Why? In the first place, the Israeli undercover unit raided the Jenin refugee camp. It is still unknown. The Israeli military didn't issue any statements yet, but the operation is still going on, and all the entrances to the refugee camp had been closed, where Israeli forces are stationing at the entrances to the Jenin refugee camp, as well as in the city of Jenin. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces had raided the city of Nablus and the village of Beita in Nablus. At least 5 Palestinians had been detained. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, the Israeli forces had raided Qabatia as well in Jenin, and clashes had erupted between Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. In the village of Ashyuch in Al-Khalil, Israeli forces have stormed the village of Ashyuch, and at least 5 Palestinians had been detained there, where the Israeli forces stormed Palestinians' homes and destroyed the belongings of the Palestinians. In the Bitonia village near Ramallah, Israeli forces had arrested 2 brothers there. And in Qalqibi, a number of Palestinians had been detained, including 1 woman.
The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has released new footage of its attacks on Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. In the latest operations, Al-Qassam said that it targeted an Israeli tank and a troop carrier with rocket-propelled grenades in the west of Khan Yunis. The Al-Quds Brigades, the military wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, said that it attacked Israeli military vehicles around Khan Yunis as well. Al-Quds also fired rockets and mortars targeting Israeli forces in the al-Maghazi camp. The group has fired missiles at several Israeli towns, including Sderot as well. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says it has used a new tactical missile in its latest operations against Israel's military sites. Footage released by the movement shows Falak 1 missiles fired at Israel's Maale Golani barracks on Friday. The new projectile has a range of 10 kilometers and carries a highly explosive warhead, weighing 50 kilograms. Falak 1 missiles have a caliber of 240 millimeters. Hezbollah has also used another new weapon in its operations against the regime. It fired a top-attack anti-tank guided missile in an assault on an Israeli military outpost. The movement released a video depicting the missile's launch, its rapid ascent, and its trajectory toward the outpost on a cliffside along Lebanon's southern border. Hezbollah has been attacking Israeli military sites since October 7. On Saturday, it staged 7 more anti-Israel operations. In one of them, Hezbollah used Falak 1 missiles to hit a secret command center in the Zabdin barracks in the Israeli-occupied Sheba Farms. Our Beirut correspondent Mariam Saleh says Hezbollah had a pretty busy day on Saturday as it carried out several operations against the IOF, targeting Israeli soldiers and military bases.
Well, it was a pretty busy day today for the Lebanese resistance. They had several operations against Israeli posts, the most significant of which was the one where they targeted the Zabdin barracks in the occupied Sheba Farms using the Falak 1. Now, this is just a rocket that was debuted just yesterday by Hezbollah's resistance since the beginning of the confrontations. This is the first time that they uncover the use of Falak 1, which is, of course, something that was developed by Iran's aerospace industries organization. And it is, of course, known to have a range of 10 kilometers and a 50-kilogram warhead. So therefore, that use in itself is very significant. And they understand that the Israelis have said that this is something that would allow Hezbollah to hit their targets precisely on a longer range, and in addition to inflict more heavy casualties for the Israelis when it comes to against their soldiers or the barracks itself. And the fact that Hezbollah has also been able to know and detect the exact whereabouts of this secret headquarters, as they said, is also in itself very significant when it comes to the intelligence war between Hezbollah and Israel.
Iran has launched 3 homemade satellites into orbit as the country moves full steam ahead with the space program. Satellite Mahda, along with 2 nano satellites, Kahan 2 and Hatef 1, were sent into outer space on Seymour 1 satellite carrier. The satellites were injected into an elliptical orbit with a minimum altitude of 450 kilometers and a maximum of 1,100. The most prominent achievement of this launch was the multiple injection operation, which was successfully carried out. It is the first time that Iranian space experts have launched 3 domestically developed satellites into orbit simultaneously. Iran has made major breakthroughs in its space sector by developing and launching numerous satellites. Pro-Palestine rallies continue unabated around the globe, some of them leading to violent clashes as security forces try to disperse protesters.
Human rights should be respected because it's a matter of humanity. They speak a lot about numbers and Hamas, and they compare this to a war. But this is not a war. It's an extermination. Palestinian people there have stones and nothing else, while they are being bombed as if it was raining. They are murdering an entire population, and it must be impeded.
The fact that when this all began, to stop giving aid to Palestine, there were only 4 states that said no. And now we're over 100 days into the genocide, and we still have states that are afraid to call it that as it is. Everyone's afraid to make an enemy out of Israel and, above all, out of the U.S.
Hundreds of pro-Palestine protesters gathered in the Italian cities of Rome and in Milan on Saturday, defying a ban by authorities. Demonstrators clashed with police, who blocked the streets and tightened security measures. The Greek capital city of Athens saw thousands of protesters marching against the continuation of U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Protesters held banners and chanted "Free Gaza" as they marched. In the Spanish capital, thousands of people marched in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza, demanding an immediate ceasefire. They waved Palestinian flags and chanted pro-Palestinian slogans. Meanwhile, dozens of people demonstrated in support of Palestine outside of the federal courthouse in the U.S. city of Oakland as a case against the country's top officials was being heard. Protesters waved Palestinian flags and held cards reading Free Palestine. American demonstrators also demanded a ceasefire in Gaza, holding a list with the names of those killed in the besieged territory. Elsewhere in the U.S., protesters gathered outside of the home of the Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Virginia to express their anger at the country's support for Israel. The U.S. has been providing military support for Israel throughout its onslaught on Gaza. Washington has also vetoed the U.N. Security Council resolutions that called on the regime to end its aggression. Meanwhile, thousands of Israeli protesters have rallied in Tel Aviv, demanding the resignation of the regime's cabinet and an end to its onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Israeli mounted forces attacked protesters and clashed with them after they tried to block traffic. Footage from the scene shows protesters trying to push back the mounted forces. Witnesses say that a number of protesters were arrested violently. Protesters demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the release of captives held by the territory's resistance groups. During the past weeks, Israelis have used every weekend to take to the streets in their thousands to mount pressure on the regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. They slam him for ignoring their pleas to prioritize the release of captives. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq has reportedly launched fresh attacks on U.S. military bases in Syria and Israeli targets in response to the regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip. According to media reports, two U.S. military bases in Syria's northeastern city of al-Shadadi and Tanf region near the Iraqi border were targeted by drones. The resistance also attacked a marine technology facility in the occupied Palestinian territories with drones. There are no further details about possible casualties or damage. Over the past several months, Iraqi resistance forces have carried out almost daily attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria, as well as Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The Islamic Resistance says the attacks will continue as long as the U.S.-Israeli genocide continues in Gaza. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listener's Special on this beautiful Sunday, January 28, 2024. I'm Atefer Fani, hosting this program today. Listener's Special is the program which is broadcast on Sundays. And it's a program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the most. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. As I always say, Listener's Special is your program. It's your views that are important to us. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listener's Special, and here we've received reception reports from around the world from Ivan Zeleny from Russia, Bala Murali from India, and from Asis Hernando from Spain. So Ivan, Asis, and Bala, thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And here we've received piles of letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read your emails and letters from Russia. Igor Kolke, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. From Norway, we've received an email from Arild Skalmras. From India, Avinash has sent us a piece of email. And here we have a letter from Mr. Rilf Monses from Germany. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special. And as you might remember, in the latest episode of Listeners Special, we decided to talk about Iranian tourist attractions. And this time, I have provided some information about Tehran, the capital of Iran, ski resorts. For those who love winter sports, Iran, a nation renowned for its varied climate, is a hidden gem. Iran provides a distinctive blend of culture and adventure that is difficult to discover elsewhere. From the snow-capped hills of Tehran, the Iranian capital, to the tranquil landscapes of East Azerbaijan. More and more people are learning about the excitement and beauty of Iran's ski resorts, which has led to the sports surge in popularity. We will look at Tehran ski resorts in this episode, each of which offers a special combination of activities, amenities, and settings that set them apart. Iran is a country with mountains, as you may know. From north to south, the country is divided by the Zagros Mountains. The narrow yet tall Alborz Mountains are around the Caspian Sea as well. Iran's tallest mountain, the volcanic Mount Damavand, is situated in the Alborz and is visible from Tehran on clear days. So, let's take a look at your emails, and then during the program, we will know about Tehran's ski resorts. So let's see what Igor Kolke from Russia says. Igor Kolke is one of our old and regular listeners from Russia who says, "Dear Pars Today, I am a shortwave radio listener from Moscow, Russia, and I am currently having a great pleasure of listening to your broadcast. I very much hope it is possible for you to verify this reception report by issuing a QSL card or an eQSL or electronic QSL. Thank you for your excellent broadcast. I really enjoy your news program. I hope to hear from you soon and would love to receive a QSL card from you to add to my collection. Best wishes and 73s. Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Igor Kolke from Russia, and many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. By saying Dear Pars Today, Igor Kolke means Dear IRIB English Radio, and Pars Today is our website. Our website address is parstoday.ir/en and VR IRIB English Radio. So, Igor Kolke from Russia, you are our old and regular listener from Moscow who have been listening to IRIB English Radio broadcast for a long time. Thank you for your information about what you think about our broadcast. As you said, you like the new section, and that's great. So, Igor Kolke from Russia, please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So, let's see what Arild Skalmras from Norway says. Aril says, dear friends, many thanks for your reply. I would be happy to receive a QSL card by email too. I would prefer to receive a printed QSL card by postal card, but I understand that international postage is expensive. At least it is expensive here in Norway and I guess in Iran too. As a radio enthusiast, I also enjoy picking up Iranian radio stations on medium wave broadcasting in Farsi. They are a challenge, both because of the language, which I don't understand, and because they are generally difficult to pick up. Still, I like a challenge and really like trying to pick up the signal of Iranian stations. Best regards from Norway. First of all, salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the capital of Iran, and thank you very much for writing to us. Arild Skalmaros from Norway. It's quite interesting that you're enjoying picking up Iranian radio stations on medium wave broadcasting in Farsi. So, if you don't know the sweet language of Farsi, you can learn it. Why not? And don't miss this opportunity to learn the sweet Farsi language, because after getting know the Farsi language, you will face an ocean of poetry and writing masterpieces of Farsi language. Arild Skalmaros from Norway, an electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We wish you all the best. So, before we get to Avinash's email from India, I better talk about Tehran's, skid resorts. First of all, I mentioned Tochal. As you may know, Iran's Tochal Mountain is a ski resort located next to Tehran's urban area and is a mountain in the Alborz Range. The mountain's ridgeline is 12 kilometers long. The residents of Tehran love visiting Tochal for amusement. Tehran and the Tochal complex, which contains the Tochal ski resort and the contemporary Tochal hotel, are connected by the Tochal cable car. One of Tehran's most well-liked ski areas is Tochal Ski Resort, which is also the one that is nearest to the city. It is one of the most famous Iran ski resorts as well. 3 kilometers from Tajrish Square in the Shemiranat region, this ski resort is located at the end of Velenjak Street. 3 cable cars are on the Tochal track. The combined length of the 3 cars is 7,500 meters, making them among the longest connected cable cars in the world. Very interesting. There are 3 tracks at the Tochal Ski Resorts, of course. So, let's see what Avinash from India says. And later during the program, I will talk about other Tehran's ski resorts. Avinash from India, one of our regular listeners, says, dear IRIB English Radio, thanks for your reply to my reception. I would like to receive a paper QSL card from you. IRIB can design QSL featuring the rich heritage and culture of Iran. You can have 6 to 12 cards based on a certain theme, such as Iranian architecture, landscapes, personalities, Iranian cuisine, sports, etc. These QSL cards serve as cultural mementos too. It would be great if you can send me the new IRIB frequency schedule by email so that I can tune in the new frequencies of IRIB and report the quality of reception. Salam and warm greetings to you, Avinash from India. Much appreciations to you for this email. Many thanks for your suggestions about the design of our QSL cards. It was interesting, of course. For the time being, please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email, and you can take a look at our website to find the new frequencies of IRIB programs at parstoday.ir/en. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Avinash from India. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and we were talking about Tehran's ski resorts. Here I mentioned Dizin, another great ski area in Tehran, Iran, and it is called Dizin Ski Resort, and it has exceptional snow conditions due to its high altitude. Skiers of all skill levels may choose from a variety of slopes at the Dizin Ski Resort. Modern and well-maintained ski lifts and chairlifts at Dizin Ski Resort guarantee a smooth and comfortable skiing experience. The Dizin Ski Resorts also provides snowboarding and hiking as other winter sports. Dizin Ski Resorts is the ideal winter vacation because of its stunning vistas and tranquil setting in the foothills above Tehran. The Dizin Ski Resort is situated in the center of the Alborz mountain range, 71 kilometers from the Şemşek city and 123 kilometers from Çalus Road. It is situated in the area called Gajre of the highlands of the north of Tehran. There are two chairlifts, three cable cars, and other amenities at the Dizin Ski Resort. There are 19 cabins, 2 motels, 5 restaurants, and other services provided by Dizin Ski Resort. Interesting. And here I have a letter from Mr. Ralf Monses from Germany. Yes. Mr. Monses says, about 45 years ago, in my youth, I already was an enthusiast of shortwave listener and always on the lookout for new stations. Now, I began to take on this wonderful hobby again. SDR and other technologies offer so many new chances. Thanks for keeping the shortwave alive. And I do like to listen to foreign stations. One can get so many different news and opinions about very interesting topics, much better than the local news. What's the power of your shortwave transmitter? I would love to receive a QSL card. Best regards and many thanks in advance. Ralf Monses. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Mr. Ralf Monses from Germany, and many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. Please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this letter. Mr. Ralf Monses, many thanks for writing to us. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Welcome back. So I was saying, in Tehran, we have also Darbansar and Şemşek ski resorts, which are very interesting. I want you to look at through net about these ski resorts of Tehran, but they are very interesting, and we may invite you to take a visit at them in Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. So here we come to the end of our today's edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us. But before saying goodbye to all of you, I do send my warm appreciations and gratitudes to those of you who have kindly and warmly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Bala Morali from India, Ivan Zeleni from Russia, Assis Hernando from Spain, Mr. Ralf Monsis from Germany, Igor Kolke from Russia, Arild Skalmaros from Norway, Avinash from India. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us at IRIB English Radio and listen to the special program. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. As the United States continued to give its full support to the Israeli regime and its ongoing genocide in Gaza, the Islamic Resistance has increased its attacks on American bases and interests in the region. Since 2020, after the U.S.'s assassination of anti-terrorist icon, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, the resistance in the region had been demanding an end to American presence. And since October of 2023, as the U.S. openly supports the genocide in Gaza, the resistance has increased its attacks by rockets, missiles, and drones on U.S. interests. And now the Americans are themselves considering if it is worth it for them to stay in the region as they continue to lose more soldiers in these acts of resistance in West Asia. Well, we're going to take a look at this on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Saeed al-Mutalibi, Iraqi politician and former political advisor to the Iraqi government out of Baghdad. And Rick Sterling, activist of Syria Solidarity Movement out of Walnut Creek, California.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with me. Let's start this off in Baghdad. Well, Saad, according to Washington, there are about 2,500 American troops serving in Iraq and 900 in Syria. Let's start from here. Why are they there when both governments have asked the American troops to leave?
Yes, thank you very much. In 2014, when ISIS was introduced into Iraq by the Americans and certain Arab countries, the government at the time asked the United Nations and the Security Council for assistance in combating ISIS, Daesh. And the Americans took this opportunity and sent a number of forces alongside Canada, Australia, France, and a number of other countries. And they stayed after we finished with ISIS and we destroyed Daesh completely with the help that we had from Iran and Russia and partial help from the United States and France and Australia and Canada. Now, after that, the Americans took this opportunity and remained in Iraq and asked the government to change the status from fighting forces into advisors and trainers. So basically, they are a fighting force, but their title is trainers and advisors. And now Iraq is asking them to leave after the repeated assault on Iraqi sovereignty, repeated attacks, and with the high number of casualties that they caused among Iraqi troops, troops that work for the Iraqi government and paid by the Iraqi government. They were attacked. Basically, they belong to public mobilization units, which answers to the prime minister. After attacking number of these forces and causing the number of martyrdom between martyrs among these forces, the government is now under tremendous amount of pressure from the public and asking the Americans maybe to find a solution to their presence here in Iraq.
Okay, stay with me, Saad. Let me get Rick Bick in on this conversation. Well, Rick, your perspective, do you think that the Americans will actually leave Iraq?
I think they are ultimately going to be forced to, and we've seen a preliminary sign in Syria where the U.S. has closed down a base near the Qamchili airport. The neoconservatives in the U.S. are highly alarmed by these reports that the U.S. is seriously considering removing the bases from Iraq and Syria at the request, of course, of those sovereign governments, because they are most concerned that the signal that it will send to their staunch ally, Israel. You know, at the same time, the excuse that the neoconservatives in the U.S. are giving for maintaining the bases is that they need to be there to, quote-unquote, fight against ISIS, which is in resurgence. Of course, as your other guest was noting, the U.S. has used ISIS as a tool in its war to undermine the sovereignty of Syria and Iraq.
Well, Saad, let's look at Syria. I mean, the resistance has attacked American bases many times there. And let's start with the legality, to begin with, of American bases in Syria when the sovereign government there does not want them there. And of course, we know that the Americans are there near the oil fields and stealing Syrian oil.
Well, the Americans are there under basically occupation. There is no legal precedence for any reason for the Americans to be in Syria. They weren't asked by the Syrian government. They don't have an authorization from the Security Council. They're just there as an occupiers, and basically what they're doing is they are stealing Syrian oil, and maybe their next move will be for them to ask to join OPEC. Because their job now is only to steal oil and gas. And that's basically their role. Of course, with assisting ISIS and al-Nusra and the other terrorist organizations that operate in Syria. So there's no excuse for any American troops in Syria. The Syrian government definitely didn't ask for their assistance. And as I said, there is no mandate from the United Nations or the Security Council for their presence.
Okay. Well, Rick, even prior to this genocide that's taking place in Gaza and the American support for it, do you think that the resistance had a right to attack American bases in Syria?
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely. There, you know, as was stated, there it's an occupation force, and so it's against the wishes of the sovereign government of Syria. And actually, about 8 or 9 months ago, the Russian intelligence chief, the chief officer of the Russian intelligence agency, accused the U.S. of training ISIS forces at their base in El Temp, and that they would be used both against Syria and against Russia. And indeed, some months after that accusation, we saw a resurgence of ISIS attacks near Palmyra in eastern Syria.
Well, Saad, there have been hundreds of attacks by the Iraqi resistance on American bases and interests since, especially since October of 2023, and this has become quite common. Would you say that Iran's 2020 missile strike on the American base of Ain al-Assad, it somewhat removed the taboo of actually striking out at American bases, or how do you see it?
Oh, definitely, definitely. The idea that the Americans consider themselves invincible and untouchable, and no one dares to attack their bases or their interests. So the repeated attacks, as you said, by the Iraqi resistance and by the famous attack that originated from Iran and on that base was on the Ain al-Assad base, that was historic. And definitely this untouchableness that the Americans were boasting about was completely shattered. And followed by now, I don't know, hundreds of Iraqi attacks or resistance, basically, attacks on the bases. And they're basically, it's a tit for tat now. The Americans attack, killing public mobilization unit, and the public mobilization unit answers them back with more missiles and more drones, booby-trap drones. So now we've reached a situation where the Americans need seriously to sit with the Iraqi government and decide on the future of these forces, how they are going to leave, when they are going to leave, and will there be a ceasefire until they leave. So there's a question.
And do you think
now,
that they want to, let me just jump in here, Saad. Do you think that one of the reasons they want to sit down and talk to the Iraqi government, it's partially because of the number of attacks and the number of American troops that they've been losing?
Definitely. It's very embarrassing for the Americans to be a sitting duck, to receive these attacks. And they, every time they attack Iraq, attack the sovereignty of Iraq, they're losing political influence here in Iraq and converting the public. Whoever maybe had some sympathy to the Americans are now completely turning against the Americans. So politically, psychologically, it's very damaging to the Americans whenever they retaliate against the public mobilization unit or against any other target here in Iraq. So definitely they need to sit with the Iraq government and find a solution to their position.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay. Well, Rick, Washington's continued support for the Zionist genocide in Gaza is making the U.S. more of a sitting target in the region. First of all, do you agree with that? And if so, why is the Israeli regime worth so much to the United States?
Well, why the Israeli regime is worth so much is increasingly coming to the fore in the question as the U.S. public is becoming aware and is realizing the extent of U.S. investment in Israel and the cost, which, of course, now we just had the International Court of Justice issue its ruling. And if a genocide is happening, then the U.S. is a collaborator in that because we've been supplying all the weapons. They didn't wait a single day to cut off funding to UNRWA because of an accusation that some members had assisted Hamas, some members among 12,000. They didn't wait, basically in one day they cut off funding. Meanwhile, they have continued funding the genocidal operations of Israel. So a lot of people, the recognition of the reality of the Zionist state is increasing daily in the U.S. The Israeli reputation is plummeting daily, and along with that, the U.S. So they're realizing the cost. And I think now the figure that I've seen is that there have been 150 separate attacks on U.S. bases in Syria and Iraq in the last 3 months. This has made a real big impact, and now there's the contradictions are emerging in the U.S. as well between those who have a longer term vision of U.S. Interests and those who are just want to follow Israel's lead wherever it goes.
Well, Rick, staying with you, I mean, is the average American, though, getting this news about these attacks that have taken place in Iraq and Syria, in your perspective?
No, they're not. That's not really being emphasized in the media. They're hearing that the U.S. is talking about withdrawing. The administration is most concerned that they don't have a fiasco like they had happened when they withdrew from Afghanistan. So I think on the one hand, their negotiation with Baghdad, they may be legitimately seeking to find a way out, or they're just stalling for time, which is what I think the Iraqi resistance is saying. We can't let them string this along. They need to leave ASAP.
Right. Well, Saad, the main reason for the increased number of attacks against, against U.S. interests is because of Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Yet instead of the U.S. demanding an end to the Zionist genocide, it labels the resistance front as terrorists when Zionist terrorists get Washington's full support. How do you explain this?
Well, there is a historic guilt in the West. We know the Holocaust didn't happen in Palestine or in Iraq or Iran or any other Islamic country. The Holocaust happened in Europe and wasn't only one Holocaust, wasn't just Germany. All European countries, including Britain and many, many, all the European countries, participated in the slaughter of the Jews. So now the only way to cover for this criminal event that happened at the beginning of the century, last century, they have to pay for this historic guilt by doing whatever the Zionists require of them. And as a retribution for their actions in Europe, now they're trying to move the guilt from Europe into the Middle East, where historically Jews and Muslims and Christians lived in harmony for 1,000 years, or even more than 1,000 years. So the idea, the Americans, in particular the Americans, they feel this guilt because they didn't assist in what happened in Europe against the Jews. And with the exodus of Jews from Europe into America, and creating this very powerful lobby groups that actually change and select representative in the government and in the Senate and in the different arms of the U.S. government. Therefore, they do receive this unlimited support from the United States to help in covering for their historic guilt.
Okay. Well, Rick, I mean, it is quite mind-boggling when we think about all of this. As far as what is happening in Palestine as we speak, this genocide that is taking place. And, of course, we know that the genocide of in the 40s now is being commemorated, and yet they're not paying much attention to the genocide that is taking place at hand. But if we look at everything and with the U.S., and if it is removed from the West Asian region, how do you think that that would affect this area?
Very positively. If the U.S. was to end its support of Israel, Israel would have to come to an accommodation with its neighbors, which should have been what happened right from the start. But instead, you had the gradual spread of the Zionist ideology and the gradual spread of American Jewish support for Israel, especially following the Six-Day War in 1967, until it basically had a lockhold on the U.S., the Western political establishment, not only the U.S., but in the U.K. as we see it, also in France and in Germany. This is now crumbling as we see increasing numbers of people in the West saying, what are we doing supporting a country that's committing genocide? And especially among young American Jewish activists, young Jewish people, as well as throughout youth in America, they're starting to question what's going on there. Why are we supporting a country that's committing genocide? We should be on the other side supporting the Palestinians. So there's massive protests continuing here. There was a big action yesterday in the city of Oakland at the judicial court as a case is being filed against Joe Biden for collaborating with the genocidal actions in Gaza.
Right, definitely it seems to be change on the horizon where, well, Saad, as we continue to see an increase in attacks by the resistance on American basis, is this another indication of the ultimate collapse of American hegemony?
I do believe so. I do believe that the rot is now moving or started from inside the United States. The civilization that they have started a few hundred years ago, it is collapsing from within inside. There is an unworkable relationship now in the United States between different sectors of society. Prices are going up, income are the same or being reduced, medical care doesn't exist. There are lots of problems. Education is on its lowest form in the United States. There are many, many problems that the United States is, civilization is crumbling. And definitely that will lead to reduce the American control overseas and the American hegemony and the American influence that they had in the past is reducing. We have to remember there's now talks of a new world currency to replace the dollar. That will mean the end of any American control over the world if the dollar is replaced by a new world currency to be controlled by other national or other entities. So yes, the Americans are losing inside their country, and definitely outside they are losing.
Rick, your final thoughts about this. Are we looking at the beginning of the end of American hegemony and also with the so-called international rules-based system?
Yes, I totally agree with your the other guest, that this is a real milestone. What we're seeing now is going to go down in the history books as an important milestone in the decline of the West. Of course, the American public doesn't benefit from the $1 trillion a year that's spent on military armaments. We're not supporting that. The infrastructure in the U.S. is crumbling apart. The cost of higher education has gone through the roof. It's something like $40,000 or $50,000 to a year to go to university. I think just as the people in West Asia will benefit from the U.S. withdrawing from the area, so will the public.